Let's open our Bibles again to 1 Samuel chapter 14, pick the story up at verse 31, where we are told that the Saul army struck down the Philistines that day from Michmash to Aijalon. Now, this battle started because of the faith of Jonathan, Prince Jonathan, and his armor-bearer, who took on the outpost on the south side of this great big encampment of the Philistines. And just killing these guys right and left, and reinforcements are coming from the Philistine camp, and they're killing them as well. Eventually, Saul and his 600 guys get there, and they start fighting even more. God is fighting for them, having the Philistines attack each other. We've got some shaking of the earth as well that took place until finally the Philistines break as a fighting unit and take off to the southwest. And they get picked at all the way to Aijalon. We're told, though, that the people of Israel were faint. The reason why they were faint, we already found out, is because Saul, at some point at the beginning of the day, swore an oath on behalf of all of Israel, all these soldiers, that nobody was going to eat anything until the complete victory had taken place on this day and sunset had come and a new day was going to start. Well, that contributes to this thing that happens at the end of the battle day as the sun drops below the horizon and a new day starts and they decide that they're not going to pursue them any farther on this particular at this particular moment. Well, the people pounced on the spoil, particularly the sheep and oxen. So they took the sheep and the oxen and the calves. They slaughtered them on the ground. Basically, they kill them quick. Maybe they stab them or something like that. But they don't do a kosher kill. And then they're either just cutting them up and starting to roast them fast, or possibly, and some commentators go this route, they may just start eating it tartar, you know, steak tartar, completely raw. But the problem is that the people ate them with the blood. That means they were not kosher killed. Kosher kill was to slice the animal's throat as it was fully conscious and alive, and then apparently to hang it up and let it bleed out completely. If you don't do it that way, then it's not a kosher kill. And that's a violation of the law given by God through Moses. So this is reported to Saul. Verse 33, they told Saul, "Behold, the people are sinning against he who is by eating with the blood." They're not doing kosher killing because they're so in a hurry to get some sustenance in them. And so he shows up and he said, "You've dealt treacherously. Roll a great stone over to me here." And so Saul said, "Disperse yourselves among the people. Say to them, let every man bring his ox or his sheep and slaughter them here and then eat. Do not sin against he who is by eating with the blood." So he sets up a kosher kill station. It's a great big stone, probably has a little flat top to it. And so every animal is supposed to be brought there, its throat sliced, and then it's taken away and hung up and bled out. And then they can start eating the properly prepared meat. So every one of the people brought his ox with him that night, and they slaughtered them there. And then Saul built an altar to he who is. It was the first altar that he built to he who is. So he has been king for over a year. This is his second year, we were told earlier on in the chapter. It's his second military operation, apparently in the same calendar year. All of his worship as a king has been done at established worship sites, high places. This is not a high place. It is not an established worship site. So he builds an altar and offers, or has his high priest offer, a sacrifice to God at this site, apparently somewhere down by the entrance of the Valley of Ajalon. Verse 36, then Saul said, so now the sun's gone down, it's dark, people are kind of finishing up eating, maybe they're rested a little bit. And so he says, let's go down after the Philistines by night and plunder them until the morning light. Let us not leave a man of them. So his military mindset is, I don't care that it's dark. I want us to finish this operation now. Let's go and track down whatever Philistines are still left out there on their way to their towns. And we will kill every last one of them that we can find. And the people said, do whatever seems good to you. Now, he started with 600 men that were still with him, remember. But then he got reinforced by Israelis that heard that the battle was going Israel's way because God was involved in it. And so who knows how many thousands of Israelis he has with him now. But their response is, we're good. If that's what you want to do, we'll do it. But the priest said, and this is the high priest, this is apparently the grandson of the late Eli. He's more than likely a very young man, but he has his high priest uniform on. He's functioning as the chaplain in the military encampment. The Ark of the Covenant is probably with them as well. So the priest said, let's draw near to God here. So his recommendation is, before we all run off into the dark chasing down the remaining Philistines, let's check in with God. And I think that's appropriate. I think it's right. So Saul inquired of God. And when we talk about inquiring of God, as we will see very clearly in a moment, he is basically going to phrase a question that can be answered yes or no, or can have an either-or response. He's going to formulate it to the priest, asking it to God. The high priest will then reach into the pocket of his uniform, right behind his 12 special stone chest piece. He'll bring those two stones out that are in there called the Urim and the Thummim. He will ask God that question as high priest. And I believe, in accordance with Jewish tradition, that one of the stones glowed. It wasn't just a matter of reaching in randomly and pulling out one stone, and that was the answer, because then you would always have an answer, even though maybe God wasn't giving it. But we know that the Urim and Thummim system sometimes does not work, which indicates to me it's supernatural. So here are the two questions that he wants to phrase out. Shall I go down after the Philistines? Yes or no? Shall I chase them down? But another one, very important, because this was probably learned with the Benjamite thing. Will you give them into the hand of Israel? Because remember, back in the Benjamin War, they asked the question, should we go against Benjamin? And they ended up getting their clocks cleaned even though God said, go against them. And it happened twice that way, until finally they said, shall we do it again? Will you give us victory? And God said, this time I will give you victory. So it seems as if Saul, being a Benjamite himself, may have learned a little something from that. So he tries to be more precise. Shall I go after the Philistines tonight? Yes or no? Will you give them into the hand of Israel? Yes or no? But God did not answer him that day. And we will read later that God doesn't talk to Saul much after this, especially not through the Urim and the Thummim. Because Saul is already starting to display a bad attitude. He is starting to take on that tyrannical mindset of, I'm the king, and I should be able to do what I want to do. Remember, he's already been told by Samuel that that was a bad attitude, and that God was going to find, has already found, somebody better than him. So he doesn't get answered. Saul makes an assumption. Saul said, come here, all you leaders of the people. Know and see how this sin has arisen today. So his assumption is, there's sin in the camp. That's why God won't talk to me. Well, we got to take care of the sin. Then he said, verse 39, for as he who is lives, who saves Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. Now, it's interesting, even ironic, that he says that even if Prince Jonathan, my heir, has done something today to cause God not to talk to me, we'll execute him. Because Jonathan did do something today, day before, according to Jewish way of thinking, that was a violation of Saul's oath. Now, in my opinion, Jonathan did nothing wrong. Jonathan was not aware that a vow had been made on his behalf. Whenever he ate a little food this day, but he did eat the food, which violated his father's oath. And so he will fess up to that in a little bit. So he said to all Israel, I left one line out here, but there was not a man among all the people who answered him. So everybody kept their mouth shut. I'm guessing some of them were aware that Jonathan had violated the oath, and they might have been worried that that was the problem. So the people said to Saul, just do what seems good to you. Therefore Saul said, oh, he who is God of Israel, why have you not answered your servant this day? If this guilt is in me or in Jonathan, my son, O he who is God of Israel, give Urim. See, that's one of the two stones. Urim means lights, which I think is interesting because the tradition is that these stones lit up according to the appropriate answer. So he basically says, if it's me or Jonathan that has the problem here, then light up Urim. If the guilt is on your people Israel, so everybody else, then give Thummim. Thummim means judgments. Jonathan and Saul were taken. So apparently God does answer this question. Yeah, it's you and Jonathan that have something going on here. Then Jonathan and Saul were taken, but the people escaped. And so Saul said, no doubt shocked that it's between him and Jonathan, cast the lot between me and my son Jonathan. And then Jonathan was taken. So the stone apparently lights up for Jonathan's name. And then Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what you've done. Now Saul is assuming that Jonathan has sinned here. And it's interesting that Josephus kind of goes along with this same idea that Jonathan had violated an oath made by his father and therefore was in the wrong. I disagree with that because it was an inappropriate oath made by Saul, which Jonathan actually said earlier in this story. He said, my Saul has done wrong in putting this oath on the people because it's made them faint, it's made them weak. They won't be able to get as much done today because of this. But here, God is highlighting for King Saul somebody that violated the oath that he made. And so Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what you've done. And Jonathan said, I tasted a little bit of honey with the tip of the staff that was in my hand. Here I am. I'll die. So he's like, fine. If you're going to execute me, execute me. So he is a very obedient and submissive son and subject to the king. Saul said, God, do so to me and more also. You shall surely die, Jonathan. And so Saul says, yep, you are going to be executed because you violated my oath. And that's where the people can't handle it anymore. The people said to Saul, shall Jonathan die who has worked this great salvation in Israel? Far from it. As Yahweh lives, as he who is lives, there shall not be one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he has worked with God this day. And so the people ransomed Jonathan so that he did not die. So the people step up and say, no, you may be the king, you may have done that oath, but Jonathan was the one who was the savior in today's story. He's the guy that trusted God. He's the guy that God used in order to get this victory. There is no way under God's heaven you're going to execute Prince Jonathan today. Now, when it says that they ransomed him, more than likely, it means that they insisted that a separate substitute sacrifice be made on his behalf, which we've talked about this, that there are places in the Old Testament law that allow for a substitute, a proper sacrifice to be substituted for an improper sacrifice. And so I think more than likely that's the way that the people worked it out with Saul, that you can offer some special sacrifice to God, and you need to let Jonathan live as prince. Verse 46, that pretty stopped everything. They don't chase the Philistines anymore. So Saul went up from pursuing the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. So this is the second year of King Saul. He has now defeated Nahash the Ammonite on the east border, and he has very severely defeated, thanks to his son Jonathan, Prince Jonathan, the Philistines on the western border. So a very good, strong start to the kingship of King Saul, although we must never forget there are some negative things happening in his life at the very start as well. Now, verse 47 and 48 seem to be a summary of his military victories over the next several years. When Saul had taken the kingship over Israel, He fought against all his enemies on every side. So against Moab, that would be off to the southeast. Against the Ammonites, that's Nahash's bunch. We already talked about that. That's off to the east. Against Edom, which is just south of Moab, so off to the south-southeast. Against the kings of Zobah, and Zobah is up in the north. It's north of Dan. And then against the Philistines, which we already talked about, that's on the west side. Wherever he turned, he routed them. So he is able to really secure the borders of Israel against all of these neighbors. He did valiantly and struck the Amalekites. That's a story that's about to come up. And delivered Israel out of the hands of those who plundered them. So he is going to be a very strong military leader. Verse 49. Now, the sons of Saul were Jonathan, he's the eldest, Ishvi, who also has the name Abinadab, and Malki-Shua. Now, there is another son, Ishbaal, that's mentioned elsewhere, who takes on the name Ishbosheth. He seems to be the second son of Saul. And why he's not mentioned in this list is unknown to me. But he will be important in the post-Saul stories that come up. Once Saul and Jonathan and Ishvi or Abinadab and Malki-Shua are all dead on the mountains of Gilboa, Ish-bosheth or Ish-baal will become very important. The names of his two daughters were these. The name of the firstborn was Merab. That will be an important part of another story. And the name of the younger, Michal. Very important part of the David story. The name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Ahimaaz. The name of the commander of his army was Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle. So Saul's uncle is named Ner. Saul's cousin is Abner, which is an interesting name. It means Ner is my dad. So Abner becomes the top commander on the field for the standing army of King Saul. Kish, of course, was the father of Saul, and Ner, the father of Abner, was the son of Abiel, which makes us think that probably Abiel is either his mom, that is Abner's mom, or Abner is the brother-in-law of Saul, and therefore Abiel is Abner's official dad, father. Some of that needs to be sorted out yet, and I'll do some digging on that. I haven't done that for a while. And I will try to find that all out in other passages. Verse number 52. There was hard fighting against the Philistines all the days of Saul. So Saul is going to spend a lot of his military time staving off attempts to invade by all these different groups. He'll hear that they're coming in. He'll go and fight them and beat them back. The Philistines are going to be particularly bad about that, and that's why that will be a very key component of some later stories. Now, very important story coming up next, but a little reminder here. When Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he attached him to himself. Exactly what Samuel said was going to happen. The king that Israel wanted was going to be a strong man, a man who was looking out for his own kingdom's sake. And that means drafting people into his army that he thinks will help him maintain a strong kingdom. That will happen to David in a little bit. But first we have this very important story that shows the end of Samuel's relationship with King Saul and the official end of God working with King Saul. Chapter 15 starts out this way. Samuel said to Saul, "He who has sent me to anoint you king over his people Israel, now therefore listen to the words of he who is." Now, when does this take place? I am guessing it's probably in the third year of King Saul's kingdom, because it is the beginning of another military campaign season. "Thus says he who is over the armies." It's Yahweh Tsabaoth. This is the military title of God we're going to see a lot of now. "Thus says he who is over the armies, I have noted what Amalek did to Israel in opposing them on the way when they came up out of Egypt." In fact, God had it written in the books of Moses. "Now go and strike Amalek and devote to destruction all that they have. Do not spare them, but kill both man, women, child, infant, ox, sheep, camel, and donkey." So this has been a long time coming. It's been probably about 400 years since Amalek tried to take Israel back into slavery. And they have been harassing them ever since. And God has said, Amalek needs to be executed as a people group. Saul is being tapped to take care of that.